Awesome to welcome Wes Brooks to the Basketball Podcast. Wes Brooks is the head women's basketball coach at Utah State University, where he was named the 10th head coach in program history in April 2024. Entering his third season, he's led the Aggies through a rebuilding phase. Brooks brings nearly two decades of collegiate experience to the role. Most recently, he spent three seasons as an assistant at Ohio State under Kevin McGough, helping secure two Big Ten regular season titles and three straight NCAA tournament appearances, including runs to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and second round. Prior to that, he served as assistant coach at Michigan, Utah, North Texas Southern, Robert Morris, along with graduate assistant operations role at his alma mater, West Virginia, under John Beilein. Hey, coach, brief interruption from your podcast to hear from one of our top supporters, Hoopsalytics. Is your starting lineup not performing to your expectations? What if your star player is injured? Who should you play together instead? You can answer questions like this using the powerful Hoopsalytic basketball platform to reveal your most productive players and lineups. Just ask the AI assistant, and based on extensive player and lineup stats and analytics, you'll get accurate, data-driven answers instantly. You can literally ask anything about teams and players and then start making even better strategic decisions. Hoopsalytics also provides top-tier video link stats with a 12-hour turnaround time, as well as handy visualizations, interactive shot charts, coaching stats, easy-to-create film sessions, and lots more. And unlike the alternatives, you get unlimited video storage with no hidden fees. Best of all, Hoopsalytics is more affordable. Now in year seven, Hoopsalytics is a true game changer for thousands of basketball coaches. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball and start using advanced stats and AI to win more games today. Coach Brooks, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you for having me. I love the podcast. So just it's an honor to be a part. I listen regularly. I've learned so much from you. So thank you for having me on.
Awesome. I followed your career for quite a while now because we connected a long time ago. And Now we get to talk about the experience at Utah State and talk to us a little bit about the challenges of rebuilding.
Yeah. For 20 years, I was assistant coach, kind of worked my way up the ranks like most coaches do. And you try to learn everything you want to learn. But coaches always say, well, until you get in that first seat, you don't really know what it's like. You never can prepare for your first head coaching job. I think you just try and learn as much as you can, and you take all the knowledge that you've acquired over years through your experience, and you try and apply that. But for me, it's all the decision-making that you have to go. And you're an entrepreneur, you're a businessman. Everything is a reflection of what you put out. And so obviously, when I took over at Utah State, they were looking for a jolt of energy for their program. They were looking for somebody with exciting, new, fresh ideas, and obviously somebody who had been a part of winning. And I had been fortunate enough to work for two very, very good coaches in Kim Barnes of Rico and Kevin McGough, as well as Lynn Roberts, who's the coach of the Sparks right now. So I've been around really good people who know what they're doing, but obviously I'm not them, and you have to learn what you don't know. But you try and pick their brains and ask them. And so when I come here to take over a program who hasn't won much and they don't really have infrastructure in place or a culture of winning, it's a challenge. I related to Chris. I said, it's like buying a house and you know the house needs a lot of repair, but then you go into the house. Oh, the floor needs to be redone. Oh, there are rats in the air conditioner. Is this
the expenses
stuff that,
can add up, can't they?
Yeah, is this stuff that you never account? You knew it was going to be some renovations needed, but stuff that you just couldn't account for come into place. And so I'm headed in year three, and the first 2 years have been challenging because I was used to winning and you just think, okay, I got it. We're going to get it. Things takes time, and I've had to learn to be patient and have to learn to stick with process and really be process driven and process oriented. And I finally think we have it this year where we're going to be able to take a strides. Last year, I think my first year here, we only won four games and it was tough. And then last year we won six, but I thought we were a little bit better than our record indicated. Probably should have been at 10-11, and injuries kind of derailed us. We lost our two top guards, but now we have a healthy roster. The university, we have an excellent athletic director who's made a huge investment. And I think that's something that I didn't really fully understand when you've been at places like Utah, Ohio State, and Michigan. The investment is already there. But for Utah State on the women's side, the investment wasn't there until now. You know, I'm grateful for it. Our men's program has been tremendous. And so I think now, when they understand where women's sports is going and where women's sports in general is, and they like the women to be on par with the men, who's had a rich tradition here and very good coaches. And we have a very good men's coach now, and Coach Jacobson, and we had one in Coach Calhoun, who those guys are just amazing. Now we're going to try and get this women's program, and we will get it to where we on par with that, and just excited about what we have upcoming.
We're excited for you. And you mentioned bringing someone with an exciting style of play. Conceptual offense has always been a
Yes.
cornerstone of your philosophy. Again, you've had great influences in terms of offense. You didn't even mention John Beilein and going back
Yes.
that
Yeah.
far, but man,
Yes.
you've had incredible offensive influences. So talk to us a little bit about how you reverse engineer your offense to be able to help your players.
So one thing is, we've always kind of, from Beilein, everybody gets amazed with the two-guard offense, right? And then even Lynn, with her, when I was at Utah, we were five out, dribble drive, and a lot of pass and cut. And then when I got with Kevin, he had studied some of the Milwaukee Bucks stuff when Budenholzer, I hope I'm saying this right, when he was there, and he had really studied it. And then I had a chance to work with Kevin for 3 years, and he was always watching European offense and NBA, and so had a really good chance to learn from him. But for me, it was one of those things where I learned from them, and we were, in my first 2 years as a head coach, we're calling plays, obviously stagger, point, we're just calling different sets. And I'm like, my staff kind of challenged me. They said, Wes, you have a big play card, and you're calling a lot of stuff. We know you love offense and all that, but let's see how we can simplify this a little bit more. And one of the things, projects we took on this summer, was how can we simplify? How can we teach the game better? We're always striving to teach the game better. We want to be teachers of the game. And that's one of the things Coach Beilein always said, just be the best teacher you can be. And this, in reverse engineering our offense, what we're trying to do is like what everybody's trying to do, just playoff triggers, playoff spacing. And so with that, we've really put an emphasis on spacing. And I've done a little bit of work with this before. I think I've told you about this before, where we've kind of just named our spacing basically single, double, triple. And so basically, if you watch any basketball game, especially the pro game, you'll see after a ball screen, there's two people on one side, or you come off a ball screen, there's that two-on-one decision. Or if you have an empty ball screen, you're playing into three people. And so when we say single, double, triple, we're saying that the person, how many receivers are ahead of you? And so we've really gone to work on that. So we start with spacing. It's our single, double, triple spacing. Sometimes it can get to four people on the side, and we call it a quad. The other thing we have in our terminology is a zero. And that's if, let's say there's three people on the other side in triple, but I reject that ball screen. If it's a step up or a side ball screen, I reject it. But then I get angled off by the defender, so I can't make that pass. So there's zero opportunity there. So on a zero, we say back it back up into one of the perimeter spots, whether it's corner or wing, and reverse the ball and move it, pass and cut, and keep the ball moving. And so we start with spacing, and that's where, when we talk about reverse engineering our offense. And so for the first week this summer, we just start with spacing. And we just tell the kids, play in space, play in space, play in space. And then after that, what we're doing is we went to what we call interior triggers. And we kind of stored this for Rick Torbett a little bit, with, we call it the dunker spot, the post spot, the elbow, and then the nail. So seven basically interior triggers. And so after that, also, we've learned a lot from you. One of the things that, when we did, you heard, had the conceptual concept clinic, we took the term the fist and flash. We took that. Basically, we're always trying to play fist or flash game. Fist meaning ball screen, flash meaning somebody flashes to one of those interior triggers, and we're going to play off of it. And so we set it up with our spacing, and then we go to fist or flash. And so fist, our ball screens, we'll set a side ball screen, which is on outer third of the floor. We'll set a middle third ball screen high. We'll set a flat ball screen in the middle third of the floor. We'll set a step-up ball screen on the outer third of the floor. And then if we go below the elbow, we call that a spur ball screen. And I just got that term from Illinois' coach, and so I liked it. So those are our ball screens. And then with the interior triggers, when we go throw it in for flash, we can, if we throw it to the nail, we're probably going to X off the nail. And then if we throw it to the post, we'll either post split, or we will do what some people refer to as Bilbao action, or we call it punch, and where you have the two people setting stagger across the elbow, and they loop and come back out. So we'll do that. We'll do that action. And then we'll just speed cut off of it, the old Laker cut. And so, but what we try and tell our kids is you can do any of those things if you just flash to any of those actions. And with our spacing, our fist and flash, we call that, I like to say 14-second offense. We have a little bit longer in college with the 30-second shot clock, and then it recessed to 20. But off of offensive rebound, we don't want to set a play. Off of offensive rebound, we want to throw it out for a three, or we want to throw it out and get into a fist or flash. And so if we throw it out to somebody who's not a good ball handler, we tell them throw it back in, and then you execute a flash action. So let's say a guard gets the rebound and a big happens to be on the perimeter, and that big, we don't necessarily want them handling it. We'll throw it out to that big, and the big will throw it back to the guard in the post, and then they can just speed cut or X. And so we try and define, okay, this, what are your strengths and what do you do? And then we try and play positionless basketball off of that. And so the reverse engineering part is basically we put in a offense without calling a play. Now we'll have some plays, but we've basically with the spacing, with the fist and the flash, we've got an offense, a workable offense that we can go to work with. And then the last thing we do, we'll put in some action. So we do the stagger and we'll just play, we'll do our shooting drills. We'll say stagger and we'll go reject single curl, double curl, and this do reads and shooting drills out of that. We have our point action, and then we have some basic down screens and back screens. And so we kind of this when we say reverse engineer the offense, we go like that and just work it backwards. But the biggest thing is spacing. And what we want our kids to be, we want to be great play after the play. We want to be really good play after the play, because most of the time we know you can run plays, but it's probably the play after the play where your team is going to score and in transition. And so the speaking of transition, what the guy, he was with the Jazz, I think he just got hired by the Blazers. I can't recall his name, but
Mike Williams, yeah.
Mike had some great points in that clinic. And one of the things I got from him is just plan and space, and is recognizing in transition momentum advantage, numbers advantage, and just those advantages. And so we've tried to really teach that, because they come up very often in transition basketball. We say we have made shot offense. On a made shot, we might get into neutral and we might have to run some sets. But if we don't have to, fine, we don't have to. That's when we'll get into stagger, point, Iverson, something like that. But if missed shot offense, we don't ever want to set up. We just want to play in space, maybe set a drag, and just get to spacing, that single, double, triple. So we really emphasize that, and we really try to pound that into our kids' head. And then on their time, we just want them to get a lot of shots, because at the end of the day, shooting, we can do all this great offense, but at the end of the day, we got to make shots and make layups. And kind of our offensive philosophy, we want to take great shots, shot selection. We teach them that layups and free throws are the best shots, and then inside out paint touch. And then we take a mastery shot. What's the shot that you feel comfortable that you can make if it's a two 60% of the time, if it's a three 40% of the time? And so we'd say that's what great shot selection is. We want to protect the ball, and then as always, we want to finish. So we chart kind of how well we're finishing at the rim. And so that's kind of basically our offensive philosophy. And it's been very enjoyable to coach, and just to see just how our kids are just playing. And one thing I've been saying all summer, Chris, is there is no wrong answer. And for years as coaches, and I even was guilty of it as assistant, and we stop everything. Oh no, you didn't do that right. There is no wrong answer. There are no absolutes in basketball. Let them just figure it out. Let them just get to space, because if they get to space, it's like kind of organic. It's going to fix itself. Spacing fixes everything.
And I agree with that. Space is always the answer. Let me ask you something about you and then about your players. First of all, about you. So you reference this, going through this from play calling to now giving them freedom. What was the biggest challenge for you? Because I know a lot of coaches are going through this too right now in terms of switching to more conceptual offense.
I've never had a problem of letting players play. I think I like that. I think for years I've always tried to look at different offenses, whether it's Rick Torbert's Read and React, whether it's the dribble drive by Wahlberg, whether it's what we did at Ohio State. I think for me is I just want to make sure as a coach we have enough solutions, and we have enough. You always say, do we have enough in? So do we have answers for everything? And so this also forced me to study the game even harder. It's like even with our ball screen stuff, okay, we say, okay, let's just teach solutions. So we call a hedge a yellow in our case. And so did we give the kids enough answers if they hedge what they can do, right? Can they throw it ahead? Can they throw it back? Can they short roll? And so we've tried to teach solution oriented. Okay, here's the problem and go play with this. These are the things you can do. And it's been rewarding because I like the kids. I think the kids are really gravitating to it. But for me, it was just a matter of my biggest concern was, do we have enough in? Do we have enough in? Or did I not do enough? And I think that's always a concern as a coach. Did I not do enough? Did I not? But I did do enough. I prepared them.
You did. And again, like that's the shift. You nailed the shift is like from like teaching the play to teaching the solution. And the solution is more important than the play because, as like often, your first action, no matter who you play against, that's going to get stopped. That's going to get defended. So it's a play after play stuff and the coverage solutions that ultimately empower it. It's very interesting to go into your process there. The second thing is for the players. Like my experience going into places and putting in conceptual offense or helping coaches put in conceptual offense. The players at first have an uncertainty because they're not used to this. But then when they get used to it, they're like, oh, wait, I can just go attack if I have an opportunity. And they buy in. But that moment of uncertainty and unsureness, because a lot of them have never been empowered in this way, is real, isn't it?
What we saw, and so we're about 4 weeks in, Chris, and what we've seen is they just stop. And I'm like, why'd you stop? And I tell them, the thing you can't do is stop. Because defensively, we want to attack people, we pressure, we press 2-2-1, and we go no middle. And offensively, we want to attack. So my personality, energy, and effort, we always want to be attacking. So if you could stop, that's the worst thing you can do. Just fill out in space. Even in transition, we say people have taught run the lanes, run this. If four people run up the side of the floor, Chris, we don't care. Why? Because we're going to find a way to space out. And we call that a quad. If three people run up the side of, okay, if three people ran that lane and they're all in the same lane, let's go wing, corner, high slot. And we'll have the ball go over to the other side and we'll just drag it. Now we're in a triple. And so for the kids, it's like, man, I can do anything I want. I just have to get to space. And so the fact that they feel like, oh, we can do anything we want at any time we want. Oh, coach is letting me play my game. But for them, it's, oh, this is kind of interesting. I've never been in a part where I can just play my game like this. And that's kind of been our thing. There are no wrong answers. There are no wrong answers. If you space, everything will get figured out.
Fist and flash game, excellent terminology. I adapted as well. So talk to me a little bit about that. What's the difference? When does one happen versus the other happen?
Yeah, so what we've tried to do is we've tried to make it based off skill set of the player. So we're fortunate. We have a couple of guards who I think are tremendous. They'll have a shot of playing pro, whether it's Europe, maybe getting to a WNBA camp, where we throw it out to them, we get into a ball screen, they're excellent at reading the coverage. Then we also were fortunate enough to have 2 6-4s. And what we're going to be able to do with them is if and one of them can actually shoot the three. So we throw it out to her, she can just shoot it. But if not, if she's inside and she flashes, we throw it in. And like I said, there's four things we typically want to do off a flash. And so obviously, if we flash to the dunker spot, we probably can't X off of that, but we can speed cut off of that. We can post split off of that, and we can run that Bilbao action. And then if we flash to the post, and I tell them anybody can do it. Obviously, the bigger, if you're 6'4", you have an advantage if you catch it on the first hash, as opposed to somebody who's 5'7". But that guard can still facilitate out of that area, and we can get a post split out of the area or that punch action, Bilbao action, if we call it, out of that area. So we really try to make it personnel based, and this, if you play out of that, that's what we want to do, and we want to go to that. Like I said, 20 seconds on a shot clock reset. We don't want to run a play. We just want to throw the ball out and they run into the fist or they run into the flash. And it all happens based off where the ball is on the floor. It's what Coach Beilein has said for years. The ball talks. So wherever the ball goes, that's what we're going to do.
The ball talks, love that. Talk to us a little bit about playing out of the dunker spot then. I know that was one of your spacing spots you emphasized. You emphasized some of the things you talked about, but I've noticed this as well, at least in the girls' game that I've coached. A lot of players have never played in a dunker spot before.
No, it's actually different for them. But what I tell them, I said, it's basically a box. You play out of the dunker spot when you're playing out of a baseline out of bounds. That's how I look at it. It's just one step in. You have a line that says in and out. So when you take the ball out, you're still basically playing in the dunker spot when you're doing a blob. And so what we've tried to do is obviously Some people are familiar with it. It's a little bit further out than the short corner, but some people are familiar with this playing zone. And so we just try and use that spot to facilitate. It's open up the spacing. If we have two bigs that are really good at passing, and they have, and they, so they can play back to the basket, they can see the floor, they can see over, and they can make those passes. And so we just try and use it as just another way to space out the floor. Like we say, we feel like spacing is the ultimate solution, and spacing can erase any mistake that we make.
So spacing is the ultimate solution. Couldn't agree more. You referenced it like the single side, the double side, the triple side. And sometimes the imperfect spacing leads to a perfect opportunity, doesn't it? And
Yes.
that's one of the hard things to be able to accept as well, is that it doesn't always look perfect, but sometimes there's an advantage.
No, and this is something that, as a young coach, you want perfect practices. You want things to be perfect, but there's beauty in the mess. And this is something that I've had to learn to accept. There's beauty in the mess, and you don't even realize that you can get better when there's beauty in the mess. And so for me, kind of like, there's been a lot of learning 2 years as a head coach, but I think that's the thing is I just try and take from each practice, each film session, one thing that I think our team got better at. And then, okay, then I just try and build. Then I come back the next day and say, hey guys, we did a really good job of this and let's continue to do this. And then I try, like today, I'm going to show our team some film and it's, these are the things we're doing really well, but these are areas of improvement that we need to make. And so I just try and, for me, just for my sanity, and it's been very hard. I'm not shy. I'm very open. I'm 10 and 51 in 2 years. And so I'm like, you never expect to be 10 and 51 in 2 years. But there's reasons for everything. And there's a reason for everything. And there's processes behind everything. And so now I just know that when you do things the right way and you just keep pushing the right way, the ball will bounce. The pendulum will swing the other way. And it's been humbling experience. Basketball will humble you, Chris. But you still just stay teaching, keep believing in what you're doing, keep learning. And that's why, like, I'm grateful for this podcast because I've learned so much. And it's, you got to believe in what you're doing. And I tell our kids all the time, if we don't believe in what we're doing, nobody's going to believe in what you're doing.
Stick with itness, resilience, all that
Yes.
thing. It's on display, coach. You got that.
Hey, coach, I'm excited to let you know that we just released a full 86-minute masterclass on how we developed youth players and teams in simple and easy to apply ways. These are the same methods that I used with local teams here in Los Angeles that have gone from getting beat by 30 to beating teams by 30. At Basketball Immersion, we coach kids for the long term. So they're still engaged, confident, and improving later in their basketball career, not just winning games at 8, 9, and 10. When you join, you get access to a youth coaching masterclass that's transforming programs around the world, plus our full library of incredible ready-to-use resources and courses. This masterclass alone is worth the investment, and your players will thank you. Go to basketballimmersion.com/sales today to get started.
Okay, so you referenced 4 weeks in. But take us through, because a lot of coaches, again, are going into this process of installing conceptual offense, especially some of the high school coaches leading into the fall. So where did you begin? What was the first thing you did with them?
So we actually began, we did a classroom session. We did 10 to 15 minutes. So we get 1 hour. NCAA gives us 1 hour a day, 4 hours a week. So our schedule is basically today, because we were recruiting on Monday, we went Tuesday through Friday this week. Usually we go Monday through Thursday. So our summer setup, we start defensively on a Monday, we do offense on Tuesday, we do a mixture of both on Wednesday, and we do nothing but transition on Thursdays. So that's our summer setup. And then what I did was with our team offensively, we did a 10-minute review of how the space looks on the floor, and we showed them clips from the NBA and WNBA of single, double, triple. When kids, or when I say kids, but in my case, we have young kids and young adults. They like that. They want to get to that level. So when they see, oh, shucks, a pro style system, that's what they're really doing in the NBA. That's what they're really doing in the WNBA. That's what I want to do. And that's where I want to be. So we showed them the spacing from that aspect. We gave terminology, the single, double, triple. So we said single, and we showed them a couple of clips and we showed them how to get to that double, triple. So we did basically a 10 to 15 minute classroom session. Then we went out. And we walk through the stuff on the floor. We walk through it. Everybody learns different. You have visual learners, you have viewers, You have people who need to write it out. Everybody learns different. And we encourage our kids to write and take notes when we go into film and classroom because you remember it that way too. And it also helps everybody's learning curve. And so then we walked it out. And then for the first week and a half, probably about the first week or two, we just did nothing but spacing, single, double, triple. And then we did our shooting drills, what we say, we call it high single, high double, but it's a high ball screen, you're coming to the single side, a high double, you come into the double side. And I have film on this, I could show it to you, but we'll come off a high ball screen and we'll have somebody help. And if the corner helps, we pass it there. If they don't, if the two people stick, we drive to the rim for a layup. And we try and do a lot of stuff with our shooting drills. We want our kids reading defense. We want our kids reading defense. And the more they can read, the less you have to call plays as well because they're figuring it out. We're trying to teach our kids how to read defense every day. And reading is fundamental, as they say, right? So we're trying to teach our kids how to read. And so we walked it through. We then did shooting drills with it. And then we try and play small-sided games with it. It's little actions with small-sided games. And then eventually, after the third week, we started basically start at the end of last week, we started trying to go up and down a little bit more with it. Because at the end of the day, we want to play fast and we want to play up and down. And so we got to be able to stay organized and play transition to offense, transition to defense, and do it. And so that's kind of how we walk through it.
You mentioned the video, you mentioned walking through on the court, you mentioned the importance of spacing. Once they are kind of playing a little bit and trying to apply these concepts, how are you coaching them on the floor? What are some things that are helping connect the information for your players?
One thing I have learned, I try not to stop it. So that's why we're going to do film today, right? I try to pull, if they're off to the side, we have coaches coach them up on the side, give them points. But we really try and stop when it's one of our non-negotiables. If we turn the ball over, if we take a bad shot, if we're not finishing at the clip that we think we should be finishing at, that's when we'll stop. And then what we say is, the thing with this is there is no wrong answer, Chris. So if there's no wrong answer, we keep saying, keep playing, keep going, figure it out, figure it out. That's what we're, you'll hear us say that constantly. Figure it out, keep playing, keep going, just don't stop. And if we stop them, we can't stop everything as a coach and then tell them just don't stop. It's like contradictory. So we have to tell them, keep going. There's no wrong answer. Come on, keep going, keep going. And so then
That's really hard to do, isn't
when the whistle does stop, when the whistle does stop and they're at the water break, that's when we try and coach and teach a little bit. And then we try and teach through film. I think that's also been the hardest thing. And it's even been hard for our assistants because like, man, they've been in a lot of programs where it's like, man, stop this, stop that. No, let's just figure it out. Because guess what? There's going to be a time where I might not have any timeouts in the game, and they got to figure it out. That's how we've
You're
done it.
speaking my language. And the other part is obviously you have the advantage of film.
Yes.
Looking back to the film after the practice can really help.
Yes.
And not every coach in high school, et cetera, can do that for every practice, but I'm assuming there's a lot of summary film that helps them individually and
Yes. So
collectively.
what we do, we have huddle. And so we post every practice on Huddle. And then we tell the kids, hey, look at it. You have questions, come back and ask. And when we get to do these small sided games and there's a call that doesn't go their way, they all come up, hey, coach, let me show you. You called the foul the wrong way. And that gives me an opportunity, okay, to teach. Because they are looking and they do look. We have a good group that will look. But yeah, we try and get them to watch film on their own. And then even I had a kid last week that was watching a WNBA game say, hey, coach, look at this. Record the film, send it to me, record it with their phone. Hey, look at this clip. This is what we're doing. And so there is a connection, and that's what we like. We want them to be learners of the game, students of the game, and then be able to bring us stuff that they see and come back and do it. And so that's very good for our program.
I love that. And now, 4 weeks later, what has improved noticeably and what needs to improve noticeably?
Yeah, so for us, our spacing has improved. Us just play after play. We're recognizing advantages and play after the play. And that's in the half court. What needs to improve is when we get up and down in the full court, just being able to continue to take that from full court to half court. And for us, when you get your kids back in the summer, we didn't want to just go full court and just go up and down for conditioning purposes. We didn't want injuries. But now that we've kind of been here a few weeks, we've conditioned and we've gotten in better shape, and our kids, we need to be able to play like this, converting from offense to defense and still be able to understand it. Like when we just go half court, it looks pretty good, but now being able to go offense and defense full court and be able to go into those actions and play. So that's what needs to improve at this point.
And that makes sense. And take us through a little bit deeper on connecting this now to your defensive philosophy. You referenced that already. Sometimes it's hard to get good at your defense when you're trying to get good, especially at a new offense. So how have you managed that?
We want to be a winning team. We want to be a winning program. We're trying to change the reputation of Utah State. And so we say we have to be good at both. You can't just be basketball is played both ways, and it's not like football or other sports where you have to play both positions. You don't come out for offense, you don't come out for defense. So you have to be good at both. Honestly, we press at Ohio State, so I took our press and we do that. So we're on a make, we're going to press, and then on a miss, we go this normal transition defense. For us, we took what the Golden State Valkyries have done, transition defense. I think Natalie has done a great job. I love watching them play. One of the things we do on our transition defense, we've sent three back and two to the rim. And so the person who shoots, so if let's say I'm on the wing, shot, and the shot goes up, the opposite person crashes and our big crashes. So those are the two people. So the opposite person of the shot crashes and the big crashes. And so when that happens, then the other three people get back and build a wall. The person who's going opposite goes to stop the ball, and the big goes to get the ball. The big can't get the rim, they sprint back. But then the guard who went, the other guard who went to crash, they're responsible for stopping the ball. If they can't get an angle to stop the ball, we have our wall. So if the ball's going up the right side, there are potentially two people, and we do a kind of a pill switch at half court, and we stop the ball like that. And so that's our transition defensive plan that we use, and we
What is
show
the
that.
desired pickup point for that player?
Yeah, early as possible, as early as possible. And if they can't get the angle to pick up, we have that wall. And so now one of the person in the wall, so if you're on the right side and you had our wall lanes are outer third, middle third, and the other outer third. Based off the angle, if I can't get it, that middle third person can pick it up, or that outer third person can pick it up. And then basically they take it and they replace that person in the wall, if that makes sense. And
It
so,
makes sense, especially I can visualize the peel switch part of that, which is
yes.
basically I can't get the angle to keep them in front, but I can keep them going in the direction of the wall, and then we
Yes.
can peel switch from there.
Right. So if you watch Golden State, they are brilliant at it. And that's where I got it from. I'm like, man, this is the best transition defense I've ever seen. As a women's basketball coach, I try and watch the WNBA as much as I can because I aspire my players to go there, and it's the best women's athletes in the world. I love the NBA and I love men's college basketball, but sometimes our girls, it doesn't translate for them. But the WNBA, it translates for our girls, and they're the best players in the world. So in watching that, I'm like, man, this is pretty good transition defense. And it's always been one of my bad things as a coach, but now watching that and studying them, I'm pretty good. And Golden State this year is the best defensive team in the league. So hey, it's not bad to steal from them. But yeah, that's how we do our transition defense, and kind of that's what we've been working on with that. And then we get into the half court, and our philosophy, we always want to keep the ball out the middle third of the floor. It all goes back to our press. We don't want the ball in the middle third. Transition defense, we don't want the ball in the middle third. And then when we get in the half court, we're no middle. So we're trying to push everything to the side and shrink the floor. I tell our girls, and I say this probably once a week, if offense is spacing and spacing is offense, defense is don't give anybody any space. And so it's like, and so that's what we go, and they've actually bought into it. We had one kid who returned from us, and she kind of was not a great defender, but she's really buying into our no middle and this pushing it down and this angling her body. And so it's been really good for her. But that's kind of what we're trying to do defensively, and like how we mesh both things together. Now, the thing, Chris, now is summer is kind of like for implementing your system and getting it going, and we've taught everything now. But now it's the style of play is playing the pace we want to play, being able to do both things at a high level, converting one to other. And it's flashes, but we're not there yet. Still need to get in better shape and still need to just be able to go back and forth. And we'll get there, but it's this July. But that's where we are and how we're trying to improve and what we're doing.
And no doubt, you don't need to be there yet, Coach. Obviously, the season's still coming, so
Yeah.
that's beautiful. Fun to dive into that transition defense. Take us through a little bit of the psychology. You mentioned the struggles, you mentioned the challenges. Let's talk about you personally as a coach, doing to keep yourself focused on the goal, focused on the process, all those different things. Because, hey, I've gone through it. We've all gone through it as coaches, those challenges. So take us through what you've learned in terms of your personal health and psychology.
I've had great people in my life. And you mentioned Coach Beilein, and Coach, I talked to him probably once every other month, and he'll just randomly text me and call and say, "Okay, how are you doing? What are you doing? What do you think about this?" And he'll just ask me questions. And so to have somebody like John Beilein call you and just ask you questions and just check on you, knowing that this guy's been to two Final Fours, he's coached in the NBA. Okay, he's helped me. That helps my psychology a lot. It's like, okay, this he
It's
still
great to
believes.
have people in your life that don't just care if you win or lose, right?
Yes. And he's like, "All right, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right." And then I've had a couple of other coaching buddies that they've been through it. And so is this, it's like you pay your dues as assistant, and it's like paying your dues as a head coach. And then the other thing is a lot of things have to go right. People always said that, and you heard it, but a lot of things do have to go right. And so it's a, and you only can control
So
what you
you're
can't
bringing a lot
control.
of cliches to truth.
Yes. And that's like, you only can control what you can control. I can control of preparing my team to the best of my ability. I can control, are we doing our due diligence in recruiting? I can control, do we show up and work every day? I can't control what the university is going to give us budget-wise. I can't control if a kid is going to, if I have my two best players who we gave redshirt money to, they go down and now they're out for the season. I can't control that. I can only control what we can control. And so we focus on preparation. We talk about championship habits, and I try and emphasize this with my kids every day. We say, you got to believe, you got to have relentless effort, you got to be consistent, you got to play, be disciplined, you got to stick together. And if you do those things, we believe competitive greatness can happen. And competitive greatness is being at your best when your best is required. And so we just try and emphasize those things every day. Belief, relentless effort, consistency, discipline, sticking together. And if those five things, we're doing those five things constantly, when it's time, we will be competitively great, and we will be at our best when our best is required. So that's something that we just rely on and we emphasize, and I truly believe in it. I've seen it work at the other institutions I've been at. And so that's what we really are trying to preach. And that's helped my mental. Obviously, I'm a man of faith, and so that helps me too. And this, you got to put things in perspective. We love the game. We love basketball, but it's not, and that's, I think, been the hard thing. When you be a head coach, you want to win. You want to have this great record. But we are winning. At the end of last season, I was like, yeah, we've established a winning culture. Yes, nobody sees it yet, but we have established a winning culture. Our girls are working hard. We're getting in the gym doing extra things. We just had circumstances beyond our control that have affected us. But if we continue to do the right things, and this is where my faith comes in, good things are going to happen. And that's where we're at. And so that's why the psychology of this, constantly reading good leadership books, constantly just studying the game, constantly talking to people who've been through it. And that's helped my mental, like I said, because it's like, man, that's it. Like, yeah, this is hard.
It's not what any of us signed up for as a coach.
Yeah.
Like, again, we don't go into any situation thinking it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
And you still believe it's going to work out, of
Yeah.
course. There's obviously those moments. Talk to us about the psychology of the players a little bit through some of these different years that you've had. What are some things you've done to keep them upbeat and moving forward and developing and focused on the process?
Yeah. One thing like I said, I read a lot, and I watch a lot of podcasts, and I believe even the motivational stuff. So every day before film session, I'm always given a little clip before we watch film, like a Kobe Bryant clip or some type of leadership clip or motivational clip. I'm really big on that. So if you come to one of our film sessions, it's always going to be some type of 1 minute, 2 minute video before that, just re-emphasizing the values. We have our core values. We have our beliefs. Our core values is always right time to do what is right. Treat others how they want to be treated. Do your job. Do whatever it takes. Handle adversity. Don't break. Learn, celebrate, and move on. So those are core values for our program. And so we emphasize those. We emphasize our championship habits, which I just told you: belief, relentless effort, consistency, discipline, stick together, and competitive greatness will happen. And so we emphasize those things. And we're always trying to, every day, that's how we build our culture, on those two foundations. And then the other thing I've done is I brought in a kind of a mental performance coach. And one thing is, we always, as coaches, and I encourage everybody to do this, one thing that we did it at Ohio State, I think it was very successful. Michigan, we also did it. They have those type of people. But as a coach, my job is to train the craft, right? We're training skills and all of that. And that's my expertise. And obviously, I'm a CEO, I'm managing the program and all that. But my expertise is, I was hired to coach basketball and do that. We hire strength conditioning coach, right? And their job is to build the body of the player. We hire an athletic trainer. Their job is to protect the body of the player. But the other thing is, three things to an elite level athlete is mind, body, and craft. And the one thing that always gets neglected, and even at our level, is mind. And so what we've done is, obviously, our university has provided mental counselors and stuff like that. But it goes beyond that. The counselor is the person, like the athletic trainer. If you go hurt, you see them. But what about the pre-mind? So I've hired a performance coach, Coach VJ, Mentality Solutions, excellent. And so she's working with our team, and she'll work with our team throughout the year. And so she's constantly telling us, it's like our strength conditioning coach. She's our mind coach. And so what she's doing, she's working with us, and she is just helping us understand, okay, this is how you react to this situation. Why are you thinking this? And she's helping us get our mind right. So we work our mind, we're working our body. And so we feel like we have all three components in place so that we can be very successful this season. And so that's what we're doing with our programming. She has a whole system, like a style of play. She has that all in place, and we're just going through that system and really building our mind. Because if the mind is right, then we can really maximize our body and our craft.
Couldn't agree more. You mentioned pre. What did you mean by pre?
So in the weight room, it's like almost like a prehab. When you go lift weights, we're lifting weights to prevent injury. Coach VJ, we're doing this mental conditioning to prevent going into a slump, to prevent going into maybe even avoiding depression or getting hard on myself. If I know how to respond, if I could, okay, we define mental toughness as this. Mental toughness is choosing your response, choosing what you focus on, and competing. That's mental toughness. Choosing your response, choosing what you're focused on, and competing. So we're training our kids, okay, what is mental toughness? All right, did I choose my response? Did I choose what I focus on? Did I compete? Because if I'm choosing my response and focus, I don't have time to argue with the ref if the call doesn't go my way. What my job is to get back, get in defense, and next play mentality. And so we're talking about these situations, and we coach this just like we coach, you didn't come off the stagger screen right. I pause, like I have a clip today. That's not mental toughness. And so that's what I mean by pre. Because if we're coaching that now, then that can help prevent after three or four losses. Oh man, I don't feel good. I don't have confidence. Well, let's go back to why is this happening? Are we doing everything we're supposed to do? And so that's the pre and the post, just like an athletic trainer. It's two different things. You have athletic trainer and you have strength conditioning coach. They're in the same realm, but they handle the body, two different ways. You have counselors and you have mind training coaches. They handle the mind, but they're handling the mind in two different ways. And that's what I mean, pre-prevention and then rehab and recovery. That's kind of what I mean by that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that and sharing these insights in terms of the program and everything with it. It all makes sense to me. The part that I want you to hammer home a little bit more is what you shared, maybe just in passing, but just acknowledging that there was a clip where you could notice and normalize that they were doing something that was either positive or negative relative to their mental performance. And that's such a big thing, right? It's like one of the problems with sports psychology, mental performance stuff, is that it seems to be disconnected from actually what happens on the floor. You're talking about actively connecting it to things that happen on the floor. Can you go?
Yeah, you have to do that. The other thing we talk about is one example Coach VJ gave. She's tremendous, Chris, really good. So we said, you want to talk to yourself. I'm a good shooter. I'm a good shooter. Like she said, you might be a good shooter, but if Steph Curry came in the room, are you the best shooter in the room? No, but you're still a good shooter. And so what we're trying to do, and with the mental conditioning, what we're trying to do is we're trying to put things in place, put systems in place. Systems win. We're trying to put things to play. If you're gonna not get back on defense, why you're not getting back on defense? You're not mentally tough. You're not mentally focused. And so it's about understanding how you're gonna respond in the moment. But it's just like a coach. I can't have a last second play and never prepare for that last second play and expect my team to go and execute it in the last second. The game happens too fast. So if you can pre-plan your decisions and pre-plan your mental approach as well as your physical game approach, then you're going to be much better off than it happening in the heat of the moment. So when it does happen, you're like, oh, okay, I know what to do. I'm here. Oftentimes, like even on a free throw line, last game, last second free throw. All right, I've been here. I know. Okay, it's 1 second left on the clock. We're down two. I need both of these free throws to tie the game to go in overtime. What's my breathing? How do I breathe? How do I react? I've been here. I've took a ton of these. A student athlete being able to reset their mind and get into a position where This is what I do. I can knock it down and not have those nerves. Because nervous energy is a good thing. It's a good thing. But how do you channel that in the right way? And that's, it is a big moment. And you want to be able to handle the big moment. So that's what we do with our mindset approach. I don't know if I answered it, made that clear, but just tried to give you an example to see just what we're trying to do. Just point out actions, point out body language, point out situations. When and just talk about when things may occur that we might need to use our mentality training so that we can overcome.
Yeah, it makes sense. And how has that changed you and maybe your staff as coaches in the way that you interact with your players, having gone through some of this stuff, understanding the mental performance side more?
I've always been a big believer of it. I've studied it for years. I've read different books. I know Russell Wilson had a guy, he had a wrote a book. A guy named Brian Kane, I studied him for years. He's on the baseball side. He does a lot of this stuff. So I've always believed in it. And then at different places I've been, and when I was at Michigan, Greg Hardin, who recently just passed away, worked with Tom Brady, and Tom Brady and Desmond Howard always went to Greg Hardin for this type of training. And so I've always believed in it. Here at Utah State, we just never had the resources to do this type of training. So now that we have these type of resources, now I'm like, okay, we got to get this because there it is a holistic. Winning is a holistic approach. Winning is an investment in everything that you need. And to be an elite athlete, like I said, the mind, the body, and the craft all have to be right to be elite. To have a championship program, all those things have to be in place. And so now I think we're ready to take the step to be a championship program because we had all those things in place. And as I started with the conversation, when I got here, none of that was in place. So in 3 years, we've had to finally get all of that. And that's what it takes to be a championship program, in my opinion. And that's what I saw at Ohio State, Michigan, Utah. And that's why we won. And so just being able to put everything you need so that you can be elite, mind, body, and craft, I think is kind of where we are now.
So you mentioned resources, and it's fascinating. All summer around college coaches, I've heard the word resources and the challenges that you're all facing because all of a sudden you need to find all these extra resources for NIL. Whereas in the past, a lot of those resources would have gone potentially to the human performance side or the sport performance side, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not like we've reallocated. You just need more, don't you?
And I would say this, and I've been blessed. We're not at the top of our league in resources, but what we are is what you got to know your priorities. You got to know yourself, and you got to know what you value. And I know myself, and I've really studied myself, and I do a lot of journaling, I do a lot of reading, I do a lot of writing. Know yourself, know your core values, know who you are, know what matters to you. Because what matters to you is where you need to allocate your budget to shape the program than where you are, where you have. It's like I said, it's like building a house. If I know my grandma lives in the house with me, I need to put the rail for her to go up the steps, then we need that, right? But somebody else might not need that, and that might not be as important to you. So what matters in your house? What are the things that are important? Do you want one flat house or do you want two level house? Do you want a garage? You got to know what you want in your house, and you got to have your priorities. And so even if you don't have as much as you want, how do you supplement it? And then when you do have what you want, how do you use it the right way and be a good steward of the resources that you have? And so we needed to get more and we got more. But now it's okay, now that I have more, how am I going to use it and how I'm going to steward it so that it can't be a success? And they say, oh wow, he's making a great use of his resources. And so I just don't want to be the person who's just saying we need more just because that we needed more because we actually needed more. But now that I have what I have, it's enough to win and be a championship program. And so that's what how I look at it.
I love the house analogy, by the way. I think a lot of coaches, if you just frame it that way for themselves, it's so true. You can go into building a house and saying, I want all this. And then gradually you have to subtract and make sure it's the most important things. And that's such a great analogy, coach, in terms
We all like a 50-inch TV, but if you need food, probably not smart to buy a 50-inch TV. You know what I mean?
And is that the most important thing for the house? That's what you've got to decide. And some people it might be, but for others it's not. And you just kind of describe coaching in general is that, we're all trying to accomplish the same thing and we can do it a little bit differently, but there are some foundational things that we need for the house. And
The number one thing we all need is players.
we all need the players for sure
We all
and
need the
good
players,
players.
so.
And that's good. And that's part of the process that you've gone through, obviously getting your players in place, but also putting them in a situation where they can be the best version of themselves is a really fun part of this for you, isn't it? This obviously.
And that's what we want. I think leadership is empowerment. I'm really big on that. And leadership is Okay, I've gotten to this point in my career. It's always been a goal for me to be a head coach. And I think because I got to this point, I'm successful. So now my leadership is, okay, my staff. I always say now the biggest thing as an assistant coach, I only focus on the players and myself. As a head coach, I'm coaching two teams. I'm coaching my staff, that's team number one, and I'm coaching my players, that's team number two. And team number one, the staff, they impact my players. So I must develop my staff just like I'm developing my team. So I'm constantly talking to my staff about leadership. I'm constantly talking to my staff about ideas I've seen. And I'm constantly challenging my staff to get better. My staff has gone to different conferences throughout the summer and since the season's ended because I want them to get better. The better version of them is the better version for our team. And so we encourage growth, and leadership is nothing but me giving my growth away. And so if I'm giving my growth away and they give their growth to their kids, and this is a growing organism as an organization, we're going to be all right. And that's why I'm so confident about the future of our program, because we're constantly growing and we're constantly looking to do the right thing. So if you're constantly growing and looking to do the right thing and you're trying to do things the right way, it's going to turn. It's just a matter of time.
The passion shines through, Wes, as always. Anytime I talk to you, you love coaching, you love basketball, you love learning, all those things. Talk to us a little bit about Utah State and the experience there.
First of all, I'm grateful to be the head coach at Utah State. It's an opportunity that as a young coach, as a young kid 20 years ago, I've always wanted, and I got that opportunity to be a Division I head coach. It's very hard to get to the spot that I'm in. There's only, what, 366 jobs? There's only 366 people doing this out of millions around the world, millions in our country, and there are a ton of people who love basketball and who love to coach. So I'm thankful every day for that. Excited about Utah State, our administration, our AD, tremendous, really so happy to be working with him. And I'm excited about going into a league that's going to be phenomenal. I know it's not the Pac-12 of UCLA and USC, but the new Pac-12 is going to be a very good league. We have great coaches: Gonzaga, Oregon State, Washington State, San Diego State, Colorado State, Boise State, Texas State, and us. It's going to be Fresno State. It's going to be a great league. We have great coaches who have done this for a long time, who have won. Scott Rooks been the Final Fours. Lisa at Gonzaga is tremendous. Ryan at Fresno State is insane what he does with his amoeba and his
League got a
pressure.
lot better, didn't it? League got a lot better.
The league is amazing. Even Ryan at Colorado State, with the stuff he does, we have a very good league. And so I think people don't realize, because it hasn't happened yet, all of a sudden they're going to realize, oh, that league is legit. I'm looking forward to competing in that league and being one of the nine coaches that represent the Pac-12 in that league. And just excited about our program and where we're going, but really excited about the Pac-12.
We're excited about you sharing with us, Coach. Thank you so much for sharing the game with us.
Thank you, Chris, for having me.